The word affinity is the word that came to mind for me for this talk. It occurred to me a long time ago. I got this word from Yamada Roshi. I believe it was in the preface to the Momonkan, where Yamada Roshi says something about there's a Japanese word for affinity, which the Japanese use interchangeably with the word karma. So affinity, you can have affinity for people, certain people. You can have affinity with certain foods, with certain music, with certain places. So in that sense, affinity or karma. And so this phrase occurred to me, some people have more affinity with Zen practice than others. And this occurred to me, this started to occur to me, this thought that I thought I would at some point develop into a talk, occurred to me while I was practicing music. And I was practicing music at home. And so many times, there are the parallels between my involvement with music and my involvement with Zen really jump out at me. So this title is really an old title. Some people have more affinity than others with Zen practice. A more accurate title, I think, would be everyone has their own unique affinity with Zen practice. And so that's the one I have sort of settled on, in keeping with all things positive here at the Hazy Moon now. So what was I going to? I was looking at my notes today, and I had a lot to say about these parallels between my music and Zen, and I just got bored to death looking at them, and I thought, you know, I'll have to save that for the memoirs. So 99 cents at Amazon.com when they're ready. It'll be very cheap. Everyone can get them. So affinity. I was thinking, you know, in a certain way, that original title, some people have more affinity with Zen practice than others, to me was a kind of, certainly as a way of sort of indulging myself in a certain kind of self-pity that I don't really do anymore. Self-pity about my sort of tragically inadequate practice. And fortunately, as I said, I'm really not very interested in that topic anymore, fortunately. So affinity, what kind of affinity do I have with Zen practice? And it started with me doing, again, this was some time ago, sort of going through a kind of inventory of the things that I have an affinity for. And in a way, this is kind of a cousin piece to my top 10 list. It's kind of more specific, and it's quite a bit shorter. But I thought I would keep with it. The first thing that occurred to me is I have an affinity with sitting. I've always had it from the very beginning. I always liked to sit. And my feeling is that if you don't cultivate, develop, whatever, some sort of affinity with sitting, you will not be at home at the Hazy Moon, because that's what we do here. That's the main course. So I'm glad that I have that. The other thing that I have an affinity for is listening to the teacher. Always had that from the first day that I heard him. I realized that I had an affinity with that. From that point onward, my affinity readings go pretty flat with the other aspects of, and of course I'm talking about ceremony and ritual and service and all that sort of thing. And the thing about ceremony and ritual and service and all that sort of thing is I appreciate them. I think they're good for me. They're they continue to be challenging to me. So I accept them as a challenge. And so there's that. One of the things that occurred to me in my little inventory was initially, very, very soon, I realized that one of the things I had an affinity for in Zen was the order of the Zendo, the way it's set up. When I realized sometime in the sort of mid to late 90s that I wanted to reestablish a meditation practice, I was interested in lots of different styles of Buddhist meditation, one of which was Vipassana. I was very taken with the Vipassana writers, the modern ones, Jack Korngold, Joseph Goldstein. And I went to a Vipassana Institute, which was an organization, I don't know if it's still around, but they had a one-day retreat at Santa Monica Zen Center. And I went there, and I very much liked the people that ran it. But there was something about it that was, it was utterly chaotic in terms of how it was conducted. And that when I started visiting Zen centers, I realized that the order of the Zendo is very, very important to me. And I think everybody who's been here on a day when there are 30 people in the Zendo appreciates it as well. Everyone knows exactly what to do, where to go, and we do it in silence. So I appreciate that part of it. I was thinking about Gassho. I'm a little self-conscious about doing Gassho here. I think this is called Gassho, isn't it? A little self-conscious about doing it here, but when I'm by myself, I do this quite a bit. It is a gesture which is healing and unifying. If I'm having a particularly sort of scattered day or, I don't know, it's a healing, soothing kind of gesture to make. In fact, I remember many years ago, I'm going to say probably the summer of 1997, I remember driving back from Santa Fe to LA, and I had already been to ZCLA, so I was familiar with Gassho. And for some reason, I started doing it as I was driving. You know, if you're driving on long stretches of highway where there's no one coming around, you don't really have to do a lot of maneuvering. And so I did this for long stretches of time. I had my hands in Gassho, and there was just something about it that just felt very good. So that's an aspect of ritual that I have an affinity with. Fusatsu, I have a peculiar relationship with Fusatsu. And I'm going to say more specifically, it's with the God of Atonement. The first time I did Fusatsu was my first session, which was New Year's Eve, 1998. And it was an unseasonably hot year. That year was very, very hot. I remember just at midnight, just sweating as we did the sort of long aerobic version of Fusatsu, the one that just goes on and on and on. But I really liked it. I mean, the fact that it was so physical and I had been sitting for so long for the first time, I think it was probably cathartic in a way. But the words of the God of Atonement have always spoken to me. And I remember sometime, I'm going to say it was 2 or 3 years after that. I believe it was like 2002. Something happened, and I spontaneously started to intone the Gatha of Atonement to myself. And I remember the circumstances of it. It was a situation where I sort of didn't like my behavior. I had either done something, said something, had an attitude toward someone in this particular situation, and I didn't feel good about it. And it kept bothering me after I left it. And I was sort of obsessing on that. And suddenly, this is my memory of it, suddenly the words of the God of Atonement appeared in my mind. And I started to intone them, all evil karma ever committed by me since of old on account of my beginningless grief, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I atone for it all. And looking back on it, this was my introduction to the affirmations. It was such an effective, it worked so well for me in that particular situation. And I was thinking about it, what's the deal with that? What's going on there? And it just struck me that it's a marvelous gimmick, because you are not, there's no conflict there. You're not telling yourself you're wonderful. You're not saying, you know, you're not having, under the great burden of having to say you love yourself. But, there's no conflict. You know, there's no conflict. You're acknowledging that you feel bad about the way you behaved or thought or acted, and you are just sort of walking straight into the flames and taking responsibility for it. And afterwards I thought, wow, and you do it over and over and over, right? That's how I did it. And then I did this continuously. There was a period where I did this continuously, and then it sort of fell away. And I thought, this is really a cool gimmick. I really like this. So there we have that. Fusatsu itself, the ceremony, the formal ceremony of Fusatsu that we do on Thursday nights, I was not always a huge fan of that. I just didn't care for it. What got me to come to it when we started doing it, we didn't do it until, I think it was 2002 or 2003, we started doing it on Thursday nights. And what got me to go is usually Nyogen would give a talk. So I would say, well, I'll go to it because I'll get a talk. But sometimes Nyogen didn't talk. And I could never quite discern a pattern. You know, when did he talk? When did he not talk? So I just stopped coming altogether. And then somehow something happened. Either I misread the schedule or whatever. I just showed up one night. Oh, no, it's Fusatsu. And anyway, my memory is that on this particular occasion, we did the ceremony and then Nyogen talked. And there was a period in there when Nyogen, every single talk, it started, and then once it started, it never stopped. Nyogen would sort of rant about what bad people we were for not being there, for not being at one with Fusatsu. And it was sort of like what bad children we were. He could see that we were just, you know, complaining about our knees and our back and having to say these religious words or whatever it was. And he kept doing that. I mean, every time that I would come, he would do that consistently. And after a while, it started to raise the stakes on coming to Fusatsu. And so I started to find coming to Fusatsu interesting because I started to think, well, what's going on here? First of all, I have no idea what he's talking about not being one with Fusatsu. But I was curious to see if I could sort of figure out what it was that was going on. So I would really try to pay attention to, you know, what was going on here. Can I be one with Fusatsu? Am I being with Fusatsu now? You know, so anyway, but literally, this raised the stakes, and I started to really think, this is cool, I'm enjoying Fusatsu now. So anyway, that went on for a long time, and then it dropped away, he stopped doing that. But one of the things that was very curious, I remember in December was kind of a rough month for me, and I remember one time I showed up for a Fusatsu, and there was no one here. I think there were maybe six of us at the most. And it was a particularly powerful Fusatsu for me. And I really had this feeling that we were like these druids at Stonehenge or something, performing this ancient ritual. And I don't think you're probably supposed to think things like that during Fusatsu. But anyway, that was my sense of it. I thought, this is really kind of cool. I like this ancient ritual we're doing. And he gave a talk afterwards, and I just felt that it was a very, very powerful Fusatsu. There was tremendous energy in the room, and I was gratified that 2 days later, at his talk on Saturday, he did mention the fact that the Fusatsu that particular night, despite the fact that it was a very tiny group of people, was a particularly powerful one. So Fusatsu became part of my repertoire. So that's in part of my inventory there of the ritual aspects. Service remains a challenge for me, I must say. It's a challenge I do willingly. As I say, I think it's good for me. Particularly difficult for me is that first service that comes during a session and after you finish the dawn block. And in my case, I've gotten, you know, 4 hours of bad sleep, and I just find it so difficult to do that. There are two services, as I recall. And I remember, I think at one point I said to myself, okay, look, you've just had a car accident. You know, it's a bad one. Nobody's hurt, but the cars are totaled. You have to wait till the cops come. You know, just deal with it like a grown-up and get through it. And that sort of mindset for me actually helped me. And that's kind of the way, I mean, that's kind of the way I sometimes do service if I'm so not into it. I mean, besides, there are enough people. I figure, look, there are all these people there that perfectly understand the service, who have a deep affinity with service. They can take care of service. You know, I'll hopefully be carried along by that energy, and we won't have to use these elaborate things anymore. But anyway, as I say, it's a challenge. It's good for me. I have no complaints about it.